One of my earliest childhood memories was sitting in my bedroom as a real small kid with a book that my father gave me. And my father loved his classic books. And I would sit there flipping the pages, pretending to read, and daydream about other stuff, because he was so insistent that these books would do to me what they did to him that he forced me to read a certain number of pages a night, and I would just pretend. And he would also, he thought vegetables were very important, so he physically would stick them in my mouth, which, as you can imagine, isn't the most effective way. And so, and I remember at dinner, he would suddenly get up in the middle of dinner without saying anything and go back to the lab to work on his experiment. So being at MIT, now having worked with a lot of kids on the spectrum, I realize in retrospect that my father is one of those. But as a but as a kid, when I went to my dad asking for help with my math and science homework, because he was a PhD chemist, and his PhD was probably the thing he was most proud about, but he would aimlessly insist on the fact that my equal signs needed to be in a row, and eventually I stopped going to my dad for help because he just wasn't able to communicate with me. But he worked as a chemist in this amazing company called Energy Conversion Devices, which was founded by a high school dropout, genius material scientist. 75% of the people were PhDs. And I remember as a kid being in the room with Stan Obshinsky, and he'd sit there with styrofoam balls and pipe cleaners and jangle this model of a molecule and say, "See these dangling bonds? If we could just have germanium here, I think the conductivity would go up." And he was surrounded by Nobel Prize winners who would then scribble on the chalkboard these formulae and say, "This is what you're saying." And it was, to me, science was this wonderfully physical, artistic thing, and that's what I wanted to be when I grew up. And so when I went to college, and it turned out to be the same structured drill and grill that I was experiencing in high school, I dropped out and said, "This wasn't for me." That was Tufts. Sorry, Tufts. Well, Tufts thankfully gave me an honorary degree later. That was nice of them. It's courageous of them, too. And then later, so I dropped out and went back to ECD, where I met the head of the Chicago Physics Department, Helmut Fritschi, who was a wonderful man. And he said, "Chicago's different. You should go there and study physics." So I went, studied physics, and in one of the first classes, I asked the teacher, "Explain magnetism to me in a more intuitive way so I can understand it physically." And he said, "You can't. Memorize the formula." And I saw all these kids lined up memorizing the formula because they knew it was going to be on the test. And I said, "This is not the science I'm looking for." So I dropped out of University of Chicago as well. And so at the same time, my sister's getting straight A's, Harvard magna cum laude, goes to Stanford, gets two PhDs in anthropology and education. And I decide this academia thing doesn't work for me, so I just started doing whatever I liked. And I went and became a professional DJ, an event coordinator, a television producer, an entrepreneur, a VC. And my sister, who was now a professor of learning, said, "You are what we call an interest-driven learner." So at least I had a name, but my father, as you can imagine, was very, very disappointed with me and very, very happy with my sister. And when I dropped out the second time, he was very disappointed. Along the way, a little over five years ago, Nicholas Negroponte, the founder of the Media Lab, called me up and said, "Would you be interested in being the director of the Media Lab?" And I said, as I do with anything new, I say, "Of course I'm interested." And so then he sent me an email a little while later saying, "We looked at your profile. You don't have a college degree. I think it's going to be kind of difficult. Don't hold your breath." But then apparently they went through a couple of hundred people and then ended up running out of prospects, and they went to the bottom of the barrel and they found me and said, "Hey, that guy, let's call him in." And so they called me in to MIT. And if you've been to MIT, it's a little bit daunting, especially for somebody who's never graduated from college. And then I got into the Media Lab, which is a shiny new building at the time, just done. And I almost walked out because it was just so impressive and so established that it didn't feel like me at all. But I decided, well, I'm here anyway, might as well take the interview. So I went and started meeting the students and the faculty for 2 days of marathon meetings, and it just blew my mind. If you've ever been to the Media Lab or know about it, it's a very weird place, even inside of MIT, which itself is pretty weird. It's the only lab that has its own academic program, which is called Media Arts and Sciences. So the first thing we do is we align the projects with the academics, which basically means we eliminated all the classes. Or the lectures, and people learn through doing. And we have 26 groups working on everything from learning to robots to synthetic biology, and everybody is learning through doing. We often say learning through construction rather than instruction. So this is a whole place full of interest-driven learners. And after the interview, it turned out that they were in love with me as much as I was in love with them, and so we quickly closed the deal, and I took the job as director of the Media Lab. And I remember remembering that my dad was a high school rugby captain, and you know, I thought, finally, I've done something that he's probably going to be proud of. So I sent him an MIT rugby shirt, and then I heard through the grapevine that he was like wearing it everywhere, and and it actually made me kind of feel weird, because I felt like, wait, you don't deserve that. You didn't help me. And at some point, I had realized I had severed my ties with my father, who I felt was disappointed in me, who didn't help me and was never there for me, and that I was mama's boy, right? So then a few years go by, and I'm going through and doing these commencement speeches for my students. And we have about 150 students, but a bunch of them graduate each year. And I was sitting in a place like this, and you see the kids, and half the parents are international, first of all, and of them, a huge percentage are in America for the first time ever. And there are all these proud parents and these kids. And then I said, you know the story, the movie, The X-Men, and some of them, most of them knew what that was. I don't know if you guys know The X-Men. And I said, remember, it's about these kids who grew up in these normal little towns, and they have these weird powers, like the ability to turn something on fire, the ability to freeze something, and they're kind of freaks. And they have a hard time, and it's really hard. And then finally, they end up in this school where they realize these things they have are superpowers, and they're going to work together to save the world. And suddenly, they're no longer freaks, they're superheroes. And I said, those are you guys. And you're about to go back into a world of normal people, and they will look at you as if you're freaks. But you've got to remember what you learned, stick together, and save the world. That's my speech. And so the kids are all nodding their head, yeah, okay. And the parents are crying. And what I realized, two things. When I was looking at the kids, I realized these kids are kind of like my dad. I mean, nothing personal, but most of them are somewhere on the spectrum. And so I realized after training them, wait, my dad didn't know any better. And then I look at the parents who are crying, and I realize how hard it must be to raise a kid that you don't understand. And I started feeling bad for my dad. And so I heard he was coming to town, and so for the first time in my life, I asked my dad out for a drink, and I told him I wanted to talk to him, and I don't know if he was nervous, but we went to this place called Back Bar in Somerville, and I sat down and told my dad, you know, it was really hard. I mean, stuffing vegetables down my throat, what were you thinking, you know, and I was going on and on about how his disappointment was so hurtful, and I don't know how much got through to him. He was listening, he was happy, but what was really important for me was, for the first time in my life, I told him, you know, I forgive you and I appreciate you. And I think for the first time in my life, I actually felt that. So thank you.